For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Attention pro athletes. Want to secure your financial legacy and thrive off the field? Oak Bridge Wealth Management, led by wealth manager Chris Anicetti, is your dedicated financial planning ally. But don't take it from me. Take it from the Dallas Cowboys' Tyler Biadasz. He says, Chris set goals financially and has been incredibly impactful in my journey in the NFL. Experience our customized, comprehensive approach, trusted by top NFL players. Don't leave your financial success to chance. Connect with Chris on Instagram at OakbridgeWM_Anicetti. That's OakbridgeWM_Anicetti. And let Oakbridge Wealth Management guide you across the goal line.
Bernstein again. Big opening. Pass five. Pass 10. Erdl's a man. And he goes all the way.
Welcome back to Believe in Badgers on the Believe Network, presented by BetOnline.ag and Oak Bridge Wealth Management. I'm Matt Perkins, joined, as always, by Badger legend, the Hebrew Hammer himself, Matt Bernstein. Bernie, how are we doing today?
Dude, every day. I could do one of these every day with you. It'd make me smile. But we're not. I'm not a legend compared to this guy right here. Casey, you're one of my favorite people, dude. I never met you. I don't think I met you when I was in college. But I met you a lot of times after in all those fun golf outings that we played in that, man, I bring this up to everyone, but you never wore a pair of shoes to golf in.
Well, I always say like, I love being on the golf course. I love doing all those things, especially if it benefits Badger football or, you know, Badger athletics, stuff like that. But I'm not a golfer. I'm not. My son, Porter, who just turned 17 yesterday, he's a phenomenal golfer. So we golf a lot, but I hold them back. I think I hold them back terribly. But I always say, you know, we're going to have the most fun. Our foursome is going to have the most fun, no doubt. And count on me for maybe one or two strokes. That's it. best ball golf. I'm all in. If I'm after three holes, if we were actually taking like scores, I lose that scorecard easily.
Well, you can lose mine right along with it. That is, in fact, Casey Rabach, former Badgers All-American center, longtime NFL player, and now working in the personnel department for the UW Badger football program, which we excited to talk about a lot of stuff here with Casey. Before we get into it, I want to remind you guys that we are presented by BetOnline.ag, where they continue to be your number one source for all of your online sports wagering needs. You name it, they've got it over there at BetOnline. Head on over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with our promo code BELIEVE. That's BLEAV, Bet Online, where the game starts. So I guess we start in Surgeon Bay here today. I learned something. I've been doing a little bit of research. You're Nick Greison's cousin. What's up in the water up there?
I think it's the cherries, actually. It's not the water. It's the cherries. But yeah, no. So Nick is my cousin. Also his brother, Chris, who had, an NFL, career too. Also my cousin, small family on that's on my dad's side, small family, but it was fun. Not only in high school playing with both those guys, but then also be able to play college career with Nick, for a short bit. But yeah, we're cousins. There was like a pipeline of guys, you know, back then in the late 90s, you know, mid to late 90s, of guys coming out of not only Sturgeon Bay, but Door County as a whole, the whole county. You know, you talk about the Flanagan brothers, you know, Jim, who went to Notre Dame, played 10, 11, 12 years in the league. His brother, Brian, who was a linebacker here at Wisconsin, Bobby Adamoff, who had a really successful career here at Wisconsin, started as a walk-on, earned his right for a scholarship and played huge dividends in those great years that we had down here in Madison.
So Casey, tell us, first of all, I love Nick because I asked him for that number. That's how I got 45. So I got a nice, also, nice. Also, he abused me as a young fullback when he was a senior linebacker, but always was super kind to me, even after the abuse on the field, which is completely normal. But Casey, take us back to like, when did you start football? What's that look like? Were you always a lineman? Like, how did you just start up playing football? I know it's important in Wisconsin, but.
Yeah. So my dad was a high school football coach. So my dad, you know, I was the water boy, you know, always hanging out in the weight room during the off season, at every practice. And then I wanted to play football. You know, I was always a big kid growing up and stuff like that. And, we didn't have a Pop Warner team. We had, something similar to that the parochial schools ran. And my dad's like, yeah, let's sign you up. I found out that I was too big to play the parochial league football. You know, this was like fourth, fifth, sixth grade football. So, I just went to practice with dad every day, you know, hung on the weight room, started working on the weight room, you know, at an early age and stuff like that. And the first time I stepped on a football field to actually play football was seventh grade. And, it was full, you know, normal football, all the rules applied, you know, it was tackle, full pad, you know, I know a lot of schools now are going to, you know, the flag football for those early ages, but, yeah, I didn't start till seventh grade, but I had a long career of being around football prior to that, just with my dad being the coach and, being around those guys.
Was Wisconsin always the dream? Like, was it always like, I would love to be a Badger? Or were you, because I feel like in the 90s, like it was, if you're growing up in Wisconsin, like you could barely even think about another place. Whereas now, like we see a lot more kids going all over the place, which we'll talk about recruiting wise a little bit later. But for you, what was that mindset in once you realized you could be a Division I college football player?
You know, tell you the truth, up until probably my, post junior year, I thought I was going to Iowa. I really did. I had a really good relationship. You know, Coach Fry was the head coach at the time. Coach McCartney was the area recruiter down here, D-line coach down there. I did, you know, a number of camps. You know, that's the way recruiting went back in the day. You know, you did football camps. I honestly thought I was going to be a Hawkeye, which is crazy to think right now. I like can't believe I actually thought that at some point in my life, but yeah, they did a really good job. So, I remember, building that relationship with them. It's totally different than what's going on today in recruiting, but you know, there was a relationship built there. You know, that was the days of, you get your name called every day, at school because there was a letter from a college that showed up, right? I remember my first recruiting letter was from the University of Hawaii. I was like, come home, dinner, dad, walk in. I'm like, I know I'm going to school. Slap that letter on the table. Can we swear? Can we cuss on here
yes.
or not?
We'll
okay,
be,
so
we'll
my dad's a high school coach, police officer. He goes, he looks at me and goes, you are. I'm like, okay. Duly noted. <You know? laughs> But like, you know, there was, it was totally different. Right. So, camps drove everything. So, you know, my mom and dad made a lot of sacrifices for me to go to a lot of camps and, you know, heavily recruited by, you know, probably the schools were, Iowa, Nebraska at the time, Wisconsin, and then Arkansas. I would not fit Arkansas, I go along. So, you know, those are kind of the three, the you know, Nebraska, oh, and Michigan State. Those four were kind of the big ones, right? Went to camp post-junior year. You know, there wasn't a lot of guys, you know, committing early on back in the day. After my junior year, really thought this was going to be where I was going to go. I remember going in Coach Fry's office, you know, post a practice down there. And that guy had some swagger. Now that guy was cool as hell. Texas guy, you know, he's born and raised in Texas. So coming to this office and the, you know, I grew up small town, you know, 10,000 people, you know, there's mahogany walls and footballs and I'm like blown away. Right. He sits down in his chair. I sit across from his desk, puts his cowboy boots up on the desk and his pants leg kind of sneaks up on him a little bit. He's got these black cowboy boots on with little yellow Hawkeyes on. I'm like, that's the coolest dude in the world, right? And we have this conversation. He's like, you know, obviously, I forget how it all went, you know, verbatim. But, you know, it was, you know, you're an out-of-state athlete. And we don't offer out-of-state athletes until whatever the date was. I'm like, Coach, I'm telling you right now, I'm going to Wisconsin tomorrow for camp. It's going to be hard to say no to Wisconsin because at that point, John Palermo, the D-line coach at that time, had built a really good relationship with me. He's like, well, we're willing to bet on this, blah, blah, blah. Go to Wisconsin, camp. And now this is like – these are overnight camps, right? So it's like mom, dad drop you off. You're staying in dorms. You know, it's three-a-day practices. You know, they're beating the hell out of you. You know, it's full padded. First flying, it's craziness, right? And – walking off the practice field, just walking back to the dorm, which to me felt like a 10-mile hike. In reality, it was a half mile, a quarter mile maybe. But you know how it is, Bernie, after practice, you're like, you're just dead tired.
You can't even walk to get water.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. And Coach Palermo says, hey, Rabach, come on, I'll give you a ride back. I'm like, hell yeah. Jump in his car, and he offers me. And I was like blown away. I'm like fired up, you know. My dad was, for some odd reason, was in town and hanging out and stuff like that. And it took me 5 days or so to realize after I got home and say, yeah, this is home for me. And and thank God, you know, hindsight, it was the greatest decision I made for sure.
That's a cool story. You bring in all these like fun because I'm like in between there. I didn't have a cell phone. I didn't have social media. And you really did have to do these things. Like coming as a New York State player, Casey, you could probably talk more about this now. Camps were super important because nobody knew who you were outside of like, you know, Westchester County. Like how did Wisconsin pick it up? Yeah. There's a couple fables about how I might have gotten to Wisconsin with people sending film there. But like – those were the days when you sent a VHS. Can you go back for a second and share what that looks like? Because I know we're going to get into like what it looks like now, which I can't even wrap my head around. But go back to like you had to take camps. You had to take send VHS tapes out. People called your house. People came to your school. Like it was really – you really built a relationship. And now I don't know if that's the same type of thing. Let's talk about the past first.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, 100%. So like post, like, you know, you play football Friday night. I remember my dad was innovative. I thought at the time he bought a VHS player that had like two decks in it. I feel like I'm in like, not, there you go. I'm not.
No, you're perfect.
So he bought a VHS like deck. I mean, the thing was huge. But it had two slots for DVD or for VHS tapes. And so, it was, you know, because that's how you filmed them. They filmed the games. It was on VHS. You know, the guy was up in the press box or whatever with a handheld or whatever mounted a VHS recording machine. And the next day, like, Dad and I were sitting, you know, in front of that thing with the TV, and we're, you know, there's a good play, there's a good play. We're making these highlight films, so to speak, on VHS tapes. And then you put them in the mail and you send them to colleges. And I don't know, like, the video storage back then must, for these like recruiting departments or the recruiting guy or whoever it was, must have just been inundated with VHS, these big bulky VHS tapes, right? And I can't believe, you know, where it is today, because it was so, so different than it is today. But yeah, that's how you got recruited, was camps. Now, camps and sending out your film to prospective colleges that you thought you fit or you wanted to go to. That's how it worked.
But you were sifting, like the kid or the athlete was sifting through colleges they wanted. Is it completely different now? Do you still get like film from kids emailing you or?
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I get emails every day of, you know, countless emails of kids, you know, sending, you know, hey, Coach Robach, I'm so-and-so from so, you know, whatever heights measurements, all this stuff, but they send you a video link now, obviously, of their huddle film. But yeah, it's, I think the biggest difference is, you know, we find them now instead of, I think there was more on the student athlete side of letting colleges know about them than the college side knowing about the student athlete nowadays.
All right. So let's go back, because I have a million questions about recruiting and how bananas it is. But I want to go back to you because I love your story and I love you. So yeah. I want everyone to know. So after 5 days, you were sitting in Coach Palermo's probably Cadillac at the time.
And it was a Lincoln Town Car, black Lincoln Town Car. I still remember it. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. Because they had switched to Cadillacs shortly thereafter after you graduated, or maybe during. So what's it like when so you say yes? I mean, I remember doing this. You had to call Coach up and say, mm-hmm. I'm coming. What was that conversation like with Coach Palermo? And were you going to play center or were you going as a D lineman?
No, I was going as a guard. You know, I was going as a guard. That's, you know, interior lineman, guard, whatever. You know, I never played center until my second year during spring ball, my first spring ball here at Wisconsin. But I remember the phone call, like, obviously I'm a 17-year-old kid, you know, at the time, nervous, excited, you know, all the emotions are running through that body, right? Call him up and, you know, Palermo, he's not, hey, how are you kind of guy, you know, tell me about this or that, you know, he's very cut and dry. So I call him up and I'm like, Coach, there's no other place. I don't even remember what I said, but you know, something along the lines, like, no other place I'd rather play, you know, than for my home state Badgers, you know, count me in, all this stuff. And, it was, you know, it was weird because now we have so much communication with them. I don't think I heard from him again for, I have no idea, you know.
On signing day.
Yeah. So I committed before my senior year, right? And signing day was way late. It was way late. I think it was
it's like February. February.
Senior year, though.
Yeah.
I think it was of our senior year, you know, it was way late. So obviously came down for anything and everything that I could come down here for, especially like home games and whatnot. But yeah, it was, I was all in, and obviously they were too. And I always say, like, you know, I'm from a small town. You know, I grew up, I think Sturgeon Bay right now maybe has a population of like 10,000 people. I think it was like 7,000 back then, you know, so small town. And I felt like, you know, you know, the Badgers took a chance on a small town guy. You know, that was kind of like my driving point. What fueled me. You know, they're taking a risk on a small town guy, and it fueled me to not let them down. You know, up until the point of getting to school here, and then that driving force all the way through school here.
I completely understand that. That who comes to Edgemont High School? First off, no one comes to Edgemont High School. It's a
you know, I don't even know, probably like 500 people in that high school. But we we were good at football, but we played in the smallest. We played in C out of D was the smallest. Neither here nor there. But I understand what you're saying because it's exactly my story. So we always, this is my favorite question and Matt Perkins' favorite question. This is also pre everything. So you can give what you want to or don't. What was your official visit like? And who was your host?
Well, first of all, host was Chris McIntosh.
Mac was my host. That's awesome.
Yeah,
is that crazy? That is awesome.
Yeah. So Mac was my host. We stayed at the golly, which one did we stay at? Oh, at the Concourse. Concourse Hotel we stayed at. I remember walking into my room. Obviously, my dad only was the only one that came down with me for the official visit. Mom had to work or something like that. Couldn't get away. Concourse Hotel, you walk in. I remember like a pizza box sitting on my bed or somewhere in the room. And I'm like, pizza. Yeah, cool. Open it up. It's this giant, 12-inch cookie, whatever, you know, chocolate chip cookie, you know, with probably the W on it, a Bucky, my name on it. I thought I was the coolest guy in the world. I ain't gonna lie. You know what I mean? And then there was, I think there was some letters, some cards in there from the coaching staff, you know, like, you know, excited you're here, you know, the rhetoric that the coach speak and all that stuff. And I was blown away, absolutely blown away that they had a 12-inch cookie in a pizza box. You
know? I don't know how much a 12-inch cookie in a pizza box these days is going to sway someone, though. Unfortunately,
back then, it was like the best thing in the world. It really was awesome to walk into that.
Yeah, it really was, because you're blown away because you don't know. You have no idea what to expect, right? No idea. So during that visit, I remember. So Mac was my host. I remember having like a player panel that we went and talked about. Now remember, the facility wise here was not what it is, you know, when we played, when I played, when Bernie played, or what it is today. So a lot of the meetings and things you did during the day were around campus. Like, I remember we're sitting in the first time, like the whole coaching staff, the first meeting that we had, like big meeting or whatever it was at some auditorium on campus. It was just a classroom. And they had some players in there and, you know, all the coaches introduced themselves, introduced us to our hosts, did a player panel, which was, I thought was one of the best parts about it. You know, guys just letting you know what a day in the life of and what to expect when coming to University of Wisconsin. I remember we did a dinner at the a steak dinner at the Avenue Bar, which is, you know, RIP. I mean, that place was phenomenal.
It was one of the best steaks I've ever eaten on my official visit.
100%. 100%. So we went to the Avenue, I remember, one night for dinner. What else did we do? I remember breakfast at Coach Alvarez's house. And kind of one-on-ones in his office. You know, that was kind of to wrap up the whole thing. We had an academic meeting where they kind of split us up. We didn't have the whole group. I can't remember how many guys were on. I'm guessing there was probably 10 to 15 guys on the entire trip at the time. I think like five of us went to like a classroom, just this random classroom on campus for an academic meeting and met with a professor of some sort. And remember, now this is in the middle of February or whatever. It was late. They used to do all the official visits in wintertime, which isn't the best time to bring prospects onto campus here. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I was all in, so it didn't matter, right? Mm-hmm. But looking back on, you know, what we do today for official visits and recruiting wise, it was nothing.
You got a cookie, dude. Nothing. You got a 12-inch cookie.
I got a 12-inch cookie now.
And probably maybe the best steak you've ever eaten.
100%. And I'm not going to lie, the breakfast at Coach Alvarez's house was phenomenal, yeah. Of course.
And you could do any. I mean, maybe Casey, I think yours was similar to mine, but like I walked in with my mom's Blockbuster card to the college club. And like they just let you in. Now things have changed dramatically at all the bars.
Yes.
So, but this is, you're talking about 01. When I first showed up, they wanted you there. They didn't really care. And we did all these crazy things. It's funny that you said by accident, but I don't think you didn't mean it literally. You're like, oh, I only really remember the Avenue and Coach Alvarez's house. And I'm like, I remember the Avenue, Coach Alvarez's house, and the cookie because that's what I drunk ate at the end of AGA.
Believe me, like we went out with hosts post whatever at night, dinner and stuff like that. And Mac was a phenomenal host. Mm-hmm. I remember the first night we went, the offensive line who was like Jerry Wunsch, golly, who was all that in that era? Manny, golly, I can't think of their names right off the top of my head. But they had a house right here on the corner of Regent Street and Breeze. And it was just beer pong and basement and, you know, whatever, you know. So it was just a hangout time, which was cool because you're just hanging out with guys. It was really normal to – it was a very similar to what I knew as, you know, what you do on a night out. You know, you just hang at somebody's house and have a good time. Obviously, we experienced State Street and all that has to do, and you know, found out what the KK was and all that great stuff. But yeah, it was looking back, comparison wise, it's kind of you kind of giggle at, you know, wow, that worked, you know, but it did.
And now you're driving around in a beautifully decked out golf cart, you know, with these kids on the back. I see you. Listen, I'm always in the I'm at State Street Brats just watching you go back and forth as I pregame. But Casey, let's get into your career because you played with some of the best linemen. You played with some of the best running backs. You played with some of the best players, maybe on some of the best teams. To be part of the Badger history.
Yeah.
I want to ask about a young McIntosh, but we can get back to that. But what were those years like? Like how exciting was it? Like what, I mean, you overlapped with a bunch of guys that I played with, like Gryson, Marcinelli, even more guys, but Ben Johnson, Al Johnson, walk through your career a little bit and like how you got to where you were. You started at guard, then you got moved to center.
Yeah.
And then you guys started having this absurd success. And I mean, you played 10 years in the league, so it couldn't have been bad there.
No, not at all. So like when I came on campus, like nowadays everybody knows who their recruiting class is, right? So mm-hmm. Jimmy from so-and-so and Bill from whatever, you know? So like I showed up on campus, or, you know, the first time I kind of realized, you know, who was all in my recruiting class was not only like home football games and stuff like that, because I'm meeting guys like Mike Solwald and who else was kind of in-state guys? Golly, Ross Kalaji, guys like that, you know, those are all in my class, you know? So I knew the in-state guys because those are the guys that would frequent these games. But I remember in high school, they used to come out with, I don't know if they still do it, but USA used to come out with a high school All-American team. And my football coach, who was the English teacher, the head football coach at the time, had it in his classroom. He goes, hey, did you see the high school All-American team? I'm like, no. He goes, so he sends it to me. He gives it to me or whatever. You know, I'm like paging through, you know, and I see Ron Dane on there. I'm like, he's coming to Wisconsin. That's going to be a teammate. I didn't even know who Ron Dane was until that point. You know, so it was crazy. So fast forward. So you get on campus and there was no like early enrolling back then. You know, now we had 11 guys this semester early enroll that graduated a semester early from high school and are now on the roster. So they're doing spring ball. They showed up here in January, whatever it is. And so there wasn't. So I graduated high school and like 6 days later, I moved into the Regent. The Regent apartments right across the road here. And I go through the whole summer strength and conditioning program. And it's, you know, Fast and Furious, and it's totally different than anything you realize before or done before. And then then you get a small break and you're into camp. And not everybody from my recruiting class even came down for that. So
wait, guys, I've never shown up the seminary.
No, I'm about to get, that's the good part. So we go to fall camp after that little break in summer, and you go to the seminary, which was where we held our fall camps from, which is out in Verona. I think it's Verona, which is a 3-week camp of 2 days. And I remember looking across the hallway and Bill Ferraro was there. I'm like, you, Bill? I'm Casey. Hey, we're roommates. You know, that's the first time I met Bill, was at camp. You know, so you walk in, you check in, you hand your keys, and you're locked in there for 3 weeks. You know, they'll give you a night off here or there and give you your keys back and stuff like that. But that's the way it was. You know, that first year, it was like drinking from a fire hose. It really was. Yeah, because it's all so new. It's all so much faster. It's everybody's bigger, faster, stronger, and whatnot. You know, so I'm playing left guard, a scout team, you know, that whole season. It really was. It was about developmental. You know, I came in here at, you know, 6'5", 275 or whatever, right? And I go through that whole year, and it's just about getting bigger and stronger and understanding what college football is all about. Redshirt that year, and we go into spring ball, and now I'm 6'5", 310. And, like, that's how fast, like, they put weight on you. You know, it was insane back then. To think about that now as I'm trying to lose all that. Going to spring ball, and we graduated five offensive linemen that year. You know, there's three of them, all four of them got into a camp at least, right? So they bring in a transfer from a JUCO, I think, or something like that. And Coach Huber was my O-line coach. You know, right before spring ball, goes, we're moving to center. I'm like, I don't know. I've never done that before, but let's go, you know, whatever. So it was me and him battling this transfer that he brought in, you know, through spring ball. You know, he unfortunately tears up his knee, and I kind of get all the reps. So it's McIntosh was the only returning star that year. Aaron Gibson had some playing time, you know, as an extra tight end and, you know, some tackle work and stuff like that. Otherwise, the three interior guys are, you know, Billy Ferraro at left, me, and then Dave Costa, who are all redshirt freshmen. And, you know, I thought we were going to kill Huber that first year because he went from a massive veteran line to, you know, sometimes we didn't know where the four hole was. We thought was left, but it was really right. You know, so I mean, it was crazy stuff like that. So obviously not only like getting thrusted into that starting role, but, you know, playing a position that I've never played in my life, you know, was taxing and whatever. But like I said before, they took a chance on a small kid from Wisconsin. I wasn't going to let him down. That year had some ups and downs tremendously, right? And the thing is, the expectations that season was there wasn't going to be a letdown from the year before. You know, Ron had just cranked off like 2,000 yards as a true freshman. You know, we got one of the premier backs, you know, behind us. You know, we can't fall short as an offensive line. And it was a crazy year for sure, no doubt.
Attention athletes, do you want a frictionless and tailored financial planning experience to secure your future? Well, look no further. Introducing Oak Bridge Wealth Management, the premier financial planning firm for professional athletes. Led by wealth manager Chris Anicetti, our team provides a unique and comprehensive approach, ensuring your financial success both on and off the field. We understand the unique challenges you face as a professional athlete, from managing cash flow habits to planning major business purchases and navigating complex contracts. That's why we've developed a proven process, working closely with our strategic partners to provide seamless solutions for your unique financial journey. Our services evolve with your career, offering short, mid, and long-term goal setting, portfolio optimization, real estate investments, and more. As you transition to life beyond the field, we support you with career development and philanthropic ventures. But don't just take our word for it. Top NFL players like Chase Roullier, Tyler Biadasz, Alec Ingold, and more trust Oak Bridge Wealth Management to guide them towards financial success. Troy Dye of the Minnesota Vikings says, "I really love the work that Chris and the rest of the Oak Bridge group do. I especially like the honesty and transparency when it comes to setting up financial goals and plans that best fit my needs and situation. It's time to elevate your financial game plan. Connect with Chris on Instagram at OakbridgeWM_Anicete. That's OakbridgeWM_Anicete. And join the winning team."
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So you get through your first year, and then you head to two consecutive Rose Bowls, and win two Rose Bowls, and you're starting in these games. Yeah. And you know, you talked about that line with you and Mac and Gibson and all these guys, Ferrario, and obviously like that sort of era, I think in a lot of ways defined Wisconsin football for the last three decades, right? Like that, yeah, that run and that sort of style of football was synonymous with not just the Badgers, but the entire state of Wisconsin for a while. Could you feel that, like, what was the culture of the team at the time that you think sort of led to that?
You know, I think I don't know if I ever played a game. There may have been a few here or there and stuff like that, but I don't know if I ever played a game that we weren't the underdog. You know, nationally, I don't think we were recognized very often as, you know, the capabilities that we're able to do. And I think as a team, we embraced that. You know, we really did. We loved being the underdog. I remember watching like college football, you know, prior to games in the hotel room and stuff like that. And Lee Corso, you know, always picking somebody else and all that stuff. And that just fueled us, you know, not only in game day, but in off season, in, you know, the game week preparation, stuff like that. But, you know, the fact that I played with some like really truly amazing Badgers is I never wanted to let them down too either. You know, I think Chris McIntosh, you know, Chris was a captain, I think, for 2 years down here. Chris could have been a 4-year captain down here because he played at a high level. He demanded perfection, you know, each and every day from everybody on the line. And that's contagious. It really is. You know, we as an offensive line as a whole, like demanded perfection each and every day we went out there. And, you know, it was grueling. I ain't gonna lie. It was grueling as hell. But we, you know, nothing comes easy whatsoever in life. And that was something that we definitely embraced and wanted to put Wisconsin on the map nationally of, you know, this is really good football and we'll play with anybody anywhere. Just make sure there's a 100 yard grass field and a football and we're ready to go.
Nothing comes easy when you run ISO zone and power all game long.
I wouldn't want it any other way. I ain't gonna lie.
And the other team knows you're giving it to Dane and like, you got to stop him. What was it like playing with Ron Dane?
It was phenomenal. I mean, Ron is a very quiet, humble individual. He really is. I mean, if you ask Ron a question, don't expect more than five words coming back for an answer. You know what I mean? And that's the way he's always been. You know, he worked extremely hard. You know, he had high expectations for himself as the team did, you know, but they, it was fun because we knew if as an offensive line, you know, if we get him to the safeties, it might go the distance. You know what I mean? Because there's nobody that wanted to tackle, you know, 246, 250, 260 pound Ron Dane with the speed that he had. You know, it was fun because, you know, the offensive staff at that time, you know, put it on us and Ron to take over games. And that was phenomenal.
It's phenomenal. I mean, you literally had the best line blocking for one of the best players to ever play at the university. Do you think Ron Dane's a generational player, or is he just someone we'll never see again because the game has kind of changed?
Yeah, the game is so different nowadays, right? You know, I think he was for the era, he was phenomenal. He really was. But I don't think we'll ever see anything like that again because the game has changed so much. You know, other than Iowa, who lines up in 22 personnel anymore? You know what I mean? It's just not there anymore. So, you know, his records and his, what he did on the football field as a college athlete, I'd be hard to find again.
I have to ask, how cool is that game against, was it Iowa where you guys, everyone's waving the towels to break the rushing record? Dude, that must have been the coolest thing.
It was so much. I mean, game day environment at that time was absolutely phenomenal. I mean, fans were, it was not just the city of Madison. It wasn't just game day. Like the whole state of Wisconsin was Badger crazy, and especially Badger football crazy. It really was. It was a lot of fun. That Iowa game. You know, we went into that season, you know, we never talked about, you know, Ron breaking the record or, you know, Ron winning the Heisman or anything like that. But, you know, as a personnel group, offensive line, like that was our goal. And we knew, and as a team, it was our goal for sure. But we knew it wasn't just going to be Ron. It just wasn't going to be the offense. You know, we needed a stout defense to get the ball back for us. We needed a phenomenal punt team, a punt return team. The whole team, you know, that, you know, Ron obviously won the Heisman and got all the accolades and stuff like that. But that team is what won all that stuff for him. Now, going to the Iowa game, you know, we were confident. We knew we were going to break the record. We knew Ron was going to break the record that game, you know. It just didn't, you know, when and how was the question, right? I'm so happy that it wasn't like, you know, a 1 yard run and he fell on his face and, you know, we kind of, you know, whatever it was, you know, he ripped off a good run. He really did. And, you know, the place was electric. It exploded, you know, and, you know, to see, the towels and the craziness and stuff like that, you know, as I reminisce and think back to it and see the video clips of it was really spectacular. The crazy thing is, you know, other than the guy that got naked and ran across the field, I don't even know if we as an offensive line like really realized the record just got broken there. Because if you look at the photos, you know, we went back and huddled up. until the streaker guy ran through the huddle, you were like, we must have broke the record, you know, type deal. But it was electric. It was fun. It was craziness. It really was.
Casey, wait, I have to jump on Matt Perkins. You really did make a great comment when you said, like, you guys set the culture for the next, up until still 24 years, 23 years later, like we would be there in the locker room or with Coach White, say, hey, throw on some Ron Dane clips. And we'd watch you guys. Like, that's how I know of all you guys. Cause we watched so many Ron Dane clips, not saying we shouldn't have been watching the O-line clips, but I really think that's, I mean, Casey, you'll never admit it, but you set a 25, 24 year culture set in those rooms you're sitting in right now. And I think that's really amazing, especially for people who don't come from Wisconsin, who don't get the culture right away. You know, when I showed up, I was like, man, this is Big Ten. Nick Gregson's chewing my face off because I'm not good enough yet. And, you know, like you had these dudes from Wisconsin who were like taking it personal to play at a high level. I just think it's so cool. Matt Perkins, you said it. You know, you guys really did set the culture for like the last 30 years. It's pretty outrageous.
I love to piggyback that. Like, I think the one cool thing, like, I had a ton of success here, you know, the awards and All-Americans and all that stuff. And I think one of the biggest rewards I got one day was I was back on campus for something. And Rayola,
Donovan.
Donovan?
Donovan. Yeah, Donovan was here and stuff like that. And I was just talking with him post practice or something like that, or post game or so, I don't even remember what it was. And he said, you know, we're just trying to follow in the legacy you guys blaze for us. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's pretty awesome. It really is. And, you know, I think it took me a while to hit, you know, what that really meant. And I think that was a standard that, you know, not only that we set here, but it was a standard that Coach Alvarez, mm-hmm. you know, lived by. You know, it was we're going to be the most physical team. You know, nobody's going to out-physical us. Yeah, we may come up short athletically once in a while, but we'll make it up in physicality. And that's what we thrived on, and that's what we tried to impose each and every Saturday, for sure.
But we didn't even mention Coach Alvarez, who literally was the lunchbox guy, like, go to work, grind. This sucks. It's going to suck. You're going to scrimmage all the time. Like, it was never, there was nothing easy. But I think that's what that sets a culture, right? Like, it's a place you want to be. It's a place, you know, you're going to work your butt off. And if you do what you're supposed to do, you'll be good at football no matter what.
100%. And it's about Coach Alvarez and the coaching staff of finding guys that buy into that culture, that want to be there because of the culture that's there. And that's what it was. It was us buying into, you know, what Coach Alvarez was preaching, you know, each and every week, and taking it to the next level.
So Matt Perkins, I know we got to jump into recruiting because I have a trillion questions, and Casey, you're the expert. But Casey, we have to give you some accolades. What do you play 10 years in the pros?
Yeah.
You're a third round selection.
Yes.
Two Rose Bowls, which I mean, that those are the last Rose Bowls we've won, sadly.
Unfortunately.
I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, like, that's just how impressive it is. Back to back. I'm missing more. What am I? 2, 3, 4 year All American? 7 year All American?
3 year only. Yeah, not four.
3 year
only. Only.
Okay, so really 2 year All American. The crazy thing is, they used to have this freshman All American team that people count for some odd reason. So I was a freshman All American, and like Coach, it was weird because, again, there's no internet. There's not crazy internet. There's not phone access, stuff like that. And you know, after my freshman year, I have to get my head beat in and like tormented. You know, Coach Heber comes up, he goes, congratulations, you're on the freshman All American team. I'm like, oh, cool. He goes, don't get a big head, go to work. I'm like,
sounds about right. I don't think I could ever be All American because they did only running backs, which wasn't very fair. But you know what? At the same time, I'm like, I don't need this to know that I am trying to produce at Wisconsin. And if Anthony Davis is on there, then I'm on there too.
Exactly.
Like, I don't care what anyone says.
And I think those accolades, I think we get caught up in a lot of like accolades nowadays and what have you. The cool thing about back then was, you know, we had a number of All-Americans each and every year, right? It didn't change anybody. It was just, all right, I guess, all right, what time's lift tomorrow? Or, you know, whatever it was, you know, and that was the mentality and the culture that Coach Albert, like, we keep on going back to this culture thing. And I don't mean to beat it in the ground, but that was the way it was. It wasn't about like personal goals or, you know, individualists that, you know, sometimes creeps into teams today. You know, it was really about the team. It really was.
Well, I think that's a good jumping off point then, because I want to ask you about, what do you think the biggest similarity between that culture that Coach Alvarez fostered was and the one that Coach Fickell is, you know, currently trying to create at UW?
Very similar. It really is. I think, you know, Coach Fick obviously played, you know, just prior to when I did, you know, so he kind of came up through that era for sure. But that's, you know, he's all about, you know, the physicality and the team first and, you know, establishing your will upon the other team. So he wanted, you know, even though we run an air raid offense, you know, so to speak, with Coach Longo on offense, it's still, that's all it matters to him is the physicality and playing fast and being physical each and every day. So it's very similar to how Coach Alvarez approached his teams for sure.
So we got to jump into this wild bananas world of recruiting.
It's crazy.
It really is. Everything I see, read, Matt Perkins is an expert here, but we talked about what it looked like 30 years ago, 20, yeah. 30 years ago, you know, sending VHS tapes out, going to camps, calling, you know, people were doing a lot of things. Coaches were calling you. They're coming to your high school. You were getting called out of class. I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. You're doing official visits.
Yeah.
Not even considering NIL right now and transfer portal. It's a different conversation. Has any of that transferred into this new generation? Is it, I understand you're sending huddle film, but you know, we have Clint Cosgrove on. He does, he's been part of a bunch of different recruiting websites. Yeah. And is that how you find people now? Like, it's so easy. Like, it seems to me like it might be easy to find guys, but then you have to sift through other guys. Like, okay, I'm all over the place, but yeah. Has anything transferred that was like the norm 30 years ago to now?
Well, I think back when I was recruited, so, you know, so 30 years ago, wherever it was, you know, the pot was a lot smaller. You know, I mean, the VHS tapes you're getting, or, you know, your recruiting radius, so to speak, was a lot smaller than what it is today. You know, you mentioned huddle. You know, huddle is, you know, the way all student athletes get their film in front of, you know, personnel departments and colleges and stuff nowadays. That has changed. That has changed everything, because it's so easy now to watch a kid from name a state.
Alaska.
You know? It really is. Alaska.
Hawaii.
It's everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's everything's so much more accessible. Everyone is so much more accessible, you know, just in life in general, right? So you're seeing, you know, the radius of schools, you know, where they recruit growing and growing every year. You get inundated daily with, you know, kids that are reaching out to you, through emails or, you know, DMs, text messages, whatever it is. So it's its own monster, for real. It really is. But you know, traditionally wise, you know, 30 years ago, we still send coaches on the road, you know, to high schools. You know, we have guys who have, you know, pre-planned areas to scout in and build relationships with the high school coaches. You know, so getting pulled out of school is still happening. I think it's a lot more. You know, I think a lot more schools know about, you know, prospect X, Y, and Z, you know, so it's in that way, it's similar, but it's ramped up considerably. The ages that we're finding these student athletes is getting younger and younger. You know, you're not just recruiting, you know, seniors and juniors. You know, by the time they're seniors, it's pretty much done. You know, now we're recruiting, you know, freshmen, sophomores, juniors for sure. Even in, like, it depends on the position, like, you know, 28 quarterback right now, which is going to be a freshman next year. We're looking at them, you know? So, I mean, it's insane. Try watching middle school film on huddle.
Well, that's actually my next question, Casey. How do you go from watching, you know, spending 10 years in the league, watching that film? I mean, people don't get how much time you spend in the film room. So you spend 15 years watching high-end football. Yeah. And then you're still watching NFL probably after. How hard is it to go from that to watching 10th grade football, 11th grade football, 8th grade football? Like, how do you personally, like, do it? Like, how did you learn how to do that?
I don't know. I think it's just trial and error, to tell you the truth. I think a lot of it is, I post NFL career, like, I wanted nothing to do with football. Like, when I retired in 2012 or whatever it was, like, I didn't want anything to do with football. But then I got back into it because my son started playing, right? Mm-hmm. So I was around, you know, high school, junior high kids a lot, you know. And then I think you pick a few traits that are like definites that you need to see on film of, you know, the position that you're looking at. And you look for those traits. You know, obviously, it's easy to find, you know, size. You know, that's the easy one. You know, it's projections. It's the traits that you see that are really good with, you know, offensive linemen. Can they bend? It's a huge trait. You know, can they bend? You know, how athletic are, is what, you know, whatever you're looking at, you know, how they come out of their hips, foot movement, strength concern. You know, I think there's a number of criteria that, you know, as you're watching film, you kind of check the boxes. You know, does, you know, and then obviously those change by, you know, the age of the person you're watching too. You know, so it's a lot of projection, to be honest with you.
Is there anything that you look for specifically? Maybe that's different than those things, like the athleticism, like.
Are you talking about like an X factor, Bernie?
Yeah, like is there an X factor? Like he doesn't take a water break, or I don't know.
Definitely. And I think like, yeah, you definitely not only like the measurables that you look at, but there's also like, you know, his effort that he gives. You know, post when the whistle blows. You know, what is he doing? You know, there. I mean, it's everything. I mean, you're looking at everything, and you know these. Everybody makes highlights now, right? And if you're evaluating off just off of highlights, you're going to get burned sooner or later. So you're watching game film, right? You're watching, you know, their biggest game or the game that they lost by, you know, 2-3, you know, a touchdown or less, you know, and you watch him through that game and see, you know, what happens when things go bad, you know, his body language, you know, what happens when things are going good, you know, his body language and stuff like that. And it's, yeah, everybody, the measurables are easy to see. It's those little nuances and whatnot that, you know, over time you just kind of realize are really good traits to also be looking for.
Matt Perkins, I'm going to ask you what yours is, but I'll give you mine. It's helping up the running back after they got tackled. I don't think I did it enough in college, and now thinking about it, I'm like, I should have done that when any of your guy was down. Like, you should have just helped that dude up. I feel like that would be a measurable that would stand out for me. Matt Perkins, you're up.
Okay, well, I don't know what my intangible would be, but actually I do. How well do they communicate their football knowledge, and how well they have to talk about the game and show an understanding for schemes? Because schemes have gotten more and more complicated. You're not lining up with 22 personnel and running ISO. You're not, you know, especially with Coach Longo on offense. You got to be really smart to understand everything that is going on. The same was with Coach Crist when he was there, right? His offenses were a lot of pre-snap movement, a lot of motion, you know, changing formation, stuff like that ahead of the play. But you're also recruiting for culture. I know in conversations I've had with some guys, like one of the really important things to, I know you and Coach Fick and Max and Pat is culture. So what would you describe a little bit, Coach, of what Coach Fick is trying to do, but how do you establish the relationships and sort of understand how guys will fit into the program at large? Because, you know, especially in 2024, when it's a more transient nature, we've got the transfer portal, you've got more kids coming, you know, early enrolling, right? Like half the freshman class is early enrollees. How do you sustain that culture and find the right guys to fit it?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, you find guys that really love football, you know, and there's guys that like to be a part of football, so to speak, like being part of a team. And there's guys that absolutely live and breathe and love football. You know, those are the guys we're looking for first and foremost. You know, Coach's big thing is effort and attitude. You know, he preaches it daily, day in, day out. And you get to know, you know, speaking with these kids, visiting with these kids, you know, of their demeanor. Like, are they intense individuals that want to come and be the best at football players? Obviously, they're student athletes. Understand that 100%. You know, I'm just talking about the football portion here, right? You know, is football that important to them? And that's who we're looking for, no doubt. I think, we talked about the physicality of it. You know, everybody's being, myself included, you know, everybody in this building, coaches, personnel, student athletes, are being evaluated every day, everything they do. You know, is it as small as, you know, checking in for breakfast, you know, classes, you know, body language in the weight room, you know, are they tearing it up in the weight room? You know, that's the thing that, you know, everything is evaluated on a day-to-day basis. And you find those guys that really love football and really love that kind of culture. Those are the kind of guys you plan on sticking around, you know, because with this transfer portal, you know, everybody, you know, I come from an NFL background, obviously, you know, honestly, everybody on our team is now on 1 year contracts, you know, so to speak. Right. So they can leave, unfortunately. So, you know, you got to find those guys that really believe in what Coach Fick preaches and the way that what we're going to demand of you every day. And those are the guys that we want for sure. 100%.
So final recruiting question before we get you out of here. How do you balance when it comes to who you're recruiting, when it comes to who you're looking at as prospects, how much do you weigh what you see and the, you know, the player personnel staff sees versus position coaches, right? Because that is, especially in 2024, it used to be like all position coaches doing recruiting, right? There were no like really specialized recruiting departments. We've seen that over the last 10 years, especially starting in the SEC, moving through the Big Ten. And now what you do is player personnel. So how much are you weighing what you see versus what a position coach may want or sees or is caping up for one prospect? Sort of what's that relationship, especially with you? You're working with just mostly the offensive line and defensive line, I know. So like, what is your relationship like with those guys? And how do you guys, you know, decide on really who you're going to focus on?
So, you know, I think so to kind of pull back the curtains from a little bit. So like my job is to initially find the guys I think fit what we're looking for. And you build, you know, just like on a draft day board, you build a board, right? Offensive line, you know, you know kind of what you're taking, you know, the numbers that you're taking for that year. You know, are you taking five offensive linemen, or are you taking three, whatever it is, four, whatever it is. And then you start ranking those guys, right? And then you present them to the position coach. And there's a relationship built between me and Coach Blas, for sure, because I need to know what he's looking for too. You know, there may be some things that we disagree on as far as what we're looking for, but for the most part, we're pretty in line with what a Wisconsin offense lineman should look like, and you know what we're looking for. But at the end of the day, final say comes down to the position coach still. But like it's fun though, because also you can, like, there's a kid from, you know, wherever that I really feel strongly about, you know, I'll stand on a table and be like, this is the guy. If you come with a complete argument for it, most of the times he'll see why. Right. And vice versa. You know, so it's a two-way street. So it's a working relationship. Is there some contention sometimes? Hell yeah. Yeah. And that's business. That's business as a whole. Right.
Sure.
But, as you said before, you know, this was all done by position coaches in the past. And in the last few years, you see personnel departments more and more involved in not only finding the kids, but recruiting the kids and, you know, doing it all. Fast forward a couple of years from now, position coaches may not be a part of it anymore. You know, I think they'll play a small role in it. But, you know, the model that college football is going right now is, you know, I think you see position coaches' role in it being smaller and smaller. And I don't see that stopping. You really don't. Especially when you look through like the SEC, Big Ten, you know, stuff like that, where we have the tools and the manpower to change that. But yeah, it's a delicate balance of, you know, of egos, for sure. But also, you know, just aligning what we truly see as what would work here.
Yeah, I have two more questions.
Cool.
Sorry to keep you a little bit late. I'll owe you, I promise. We don't need to dive deep into this because it's its own beast. But we're trying to build this culture at Wisconsin, right? I think we're all trying to help. I think every Badger tries to help the program in whatever way they can. Yeah. The NIL is this huge monster, right? How do you compete to build this culture that you want to beat, that Fickell wants to make, that that we're trying to keep, you know, your legacy, Donovan's, mine, everyone's, and compete in this crazy world with the NIL? You don't have to go deep into it because it's its own, and we could be here for days on it, but it's got to be such a pain in the butt to say we got this perfect kid, and then maybe name, image, likeness is the reason, not a coaching fit, not a, like, I see myself, not an academic. Does that, I mean, it has to play a part, but like, what's that pain point for you guys?
Yeah. It, like you said, it's its own animal. It really is. And, and we have ran into those situations 100% where we think it's the perfect thing and you lose out. You do. You can't, you know, one coach one time said to me, you can't, what was the saying? Something about the ones you lose is the ones you lose and move on, whatever. But it's hard, right? Because you pour a lot of resources and a lot of time and effort into individuals. NIL is not going away, unfortunately. You know, we are blessed here at the university where we do have a fairly competitive NIL with the varsity collective and stuff like that. But it's nowhere near the scale of, you know, some of the larger schools that, not the need to be said, but we kind of get the idea. I think
not always a good thing, though. Yeah. It's not always a positive to be that. I mean, you can see kids are just like, let's not dive into it. I have one more question that's actually.
Let me finish up this thought, please. But like, I think the vetting of student athletes and finding the guys that really care, that football really, really cares to them, and guys that really fit the culture, I think kind of trumps all that. Because yeah, we are, the, you know, university is competitive in NIL, and we're not going to recruit a kid that, you know, NIL is number one on their box. You know, we're going to recruit the kid that, that football is number one in their box. You know, the kid that has, you know, an engineering degree from Wisconsin is number two in their box, you know, whatever it is. But yeah, it's the world we live in now. It's not fun to say the least. But it's, you know, the vetting process and the size and the fact that, you know, personnel departments are getting bigger and bigger. So you can do some more investigation and find out more about student athletes is definitely helping the process, to say the least.
So I got one more question. Casey, when you sit on these meetings, you're in a high school, you're with a student, with their parents, maybe you're with the coaching staff. How does it feel like, what's it like when you literally offer somebody a scholarship and it's going to change their entire life? And they're like, that they're going to say yes. And it's going to make their, like, what is that must feel. So I just want to hear from your words, like that experience.
It's a great experience. No doubt. No, it's euphoric. It really is. You know, the cool thing is I've been in these kids' shoes, right? And not the craziness world that recruiting is today, but I've been in their shoes. And I remember that feeling of getting a college scholarship offer. And, it's fun. I ain't gonna lie. It is fun because you see, you know, the jubilation on mom and dad's face, the kid's face, whatever it is. And you reminisce of what that feeling was like for you back in the day. And, you know, I hate to be an old head and all that stuff, but like, you know, that's why I think like there's a lot of schools that offer a lot of kids, no doubt. Right. And I think that Wisconsin does it the right way still. And, you know, we're not going to be the 400 offer, 500 offer school each recruiting cycle because of, you know, of the kind of kids we recruit. You know, we're going to be, you know, in the middle of the road, but, you know, so those mean something. You know, those, you know, when I give an offer to a kid or a coach gives an offer to a kid, you know, those are committable offers. Like he can turn around and say, 30 seconds after you offer him, say, I'm coming. We got our guy, right? So it is life changing for a lot of kids. It really is. You know, I'm the first in my family, I think, to get a college degree. You know, so it's like that opportunity it is still out there for a lot of these kids. You know, and it's stuff. It's craziness to think like that. You know, it can be life changing. Not only like the degree portion of it, but you know, the development into being an NFL player and like playing 10 years in the NFL, it's the first step of many, but it's huge. It is fun and it's exciting and everything else. And then seeing them develop is the greatest part.
Yeah. Oh, I just asked that. Let us, Matt Perkins and I, do it one time. Just go.
Oh my God. That'd be crazy.
Let's just find some kid that you guys want to offer and then let us just go do it.
We'll do it on the podcast. It'd be perfect.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be for that would be amazing. That would be amazing. I just think it would be so amazing to see like their face light up and you know, right. As we had that experience, know like your life is never going to be the same because you're going to play, you're going to go to Wisconsin, you're going to live in the Midwest, you're going to be in Madison, and your whole life is now down this new amazing path that could get you where, like, listen, you're sitting in the Wisconsin office working for the football team. You know, like my wife's from Wisconsin. We have a kid now. Like I generate all like my positives to Coach Alvarez saying, let's take a chance on this kid.
Yes, yeah, it's true. It's 100% true. And the cool thing is like, you know, I never thought I'd be sitting here working for University of Wisconsin in the personnel department. No doubt. You know, I remember it's crazy. The cool thing is like your wife is from Wisconsin. You know, my wife is my high school sweetheart. She's been through this whole journey with me forever. You know, so she's seen it all. She's seen the good, the bad, the ugly, no doubt. And it's amazing to think like, you know, reminisce about, you know, whatever it is, 30 years ago, almost 30 years ago now. And to see that process of how it all came together, because I could never have planned any of this. No doubt. And it really did start with that offer from the University of Wisconsin, and here I am today.
Right, because you could have taken the Iowa path, and who knows? You could still be sitting in Wisconsin. It doesn't mean it wouldn't, but I probably wouldn't have. I doubt
I would be friends with you. Think about that. Like, if I went to Iowa, there's no way my high school sweetheart would have followed me to Iowa. And so my three kids, probably wouldn't have them. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's nuts to think that just blew my mind, Bernie. Yeah.
It's really – I mean – I've thought a lot about this because really like when you reflect, like, cause we've been doing the podcast and asking a lot of people why Wisconsin, but if nobody ever reflects on like, holy moly, this gave me every opportunity. I work for the university too. Like I would have never had this opportunity to do this unless I didn't play or went to Wisconsin. Right. That's number one.
Yeah.
And then playing football doesn't hurt. It helps. So it's just like, it's all these things intertwined that when I boil it down, I'm like, man, if Barry and Coach White didn't say like, yeah, we'll take this random like Jewish kid from Westchester County, New York, like I wouldn't be here. Like, there's no way. I don't know where I'd be. But I don't want to know. I don't like to know.
I'm happy with everything, how it turned out, that's for sure.
Well, Casey, we're happy that you are here and in this position. I'm just happy that we've, you know, been able to have such a cool friendship over the course of many years. But dude, literally, you guys, it's so cool to think about that you literally did this culture, like you created this. And now what's cool is Fickell, even Coach Chris, Jimmy, everyone has built on that culture that you guys created. And
100%.
I don't know, if you were reflecting, I would say that's pretty awesome.
And I never take the time to sit back and, you know, smell the roses or however you want, whatever the cliche is of it. But like to think back and stuff like that. But, you know, that culture really has carried through to today. It really has. You know, it started in 91 with Coach Alvarez, and like every coach that has been here, every staff that's been here, it really is the dominating force of what Wisconsin football is. It's pretty awesome.
It's so cool.
It is really awesome. Yeah. And it's been really awesome to have you here, Coach. And we're so excited about everything Wisconsin, obviously, all the time on this podcast. That's what we do. I'm not here if I didn't go to Wisconsin and watch this guy hurdle over a bunch of guys wearing Penn State uniforms. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in wherever you are to Believe in Badgers on the Believe Network, presented by betonline.ag and Oak Bridge Wealth Management. Again, thanks for tuning in. And until next time, on Wisconsin.
On Wisconsin.
On Wisconsin.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.